Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Audio Road. Welcome to Trends in Technology. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa Campbell is your producer and call screener extraordinaire. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show where we explore what's going on in the trucking industry. It's a mix of new products, new services, and new technology. We'll also bring you expert guests from all areas of the industry, such as Bruce Mallinson on diesel engines and performance, and Mike Beckett on tires and alignment, as well as many others. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in with your question or comment. It's up to you. This is your show. Once again, welcome to Trends in Technology. And here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember, to talk to Kevin, press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your calls. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Trends and Technology. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa Campbell will be screening your calls tonight. If you're listening to us online and you want to join in live, we've got some phone lines open. You can join the call by dialing 347-884-8327. Once you're on that call and you want to jump in with a question, a comment, a topic, whatever it might be, just press 1. You'll talk to Lisa first, and then we'll get to your calls. Again, that phone number, 347-884-8327. Tonight is Trends in Technology. I'm going to be talking with Robert Fitzgerald of Fitzgerald Truck Sales. We're going to be talking about glider kits, maybe a little bit about the signature truck. We've got some stats we're going to go over and an ECM report that we'll talk about. It's also open phone lines. If you've got questions about glider kits, about whatever it might be, feel free to jump in. In fact, if you've got a question or a topic, go ahead and press 1 now. Lisa will get those calls set up. I'm going to bring on Robert. Robert, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin.
Hey there. How are you doing?
Can you hear me okay?
You sound great.
Okay, good.
What have you been up to?
Nothing. Just building trucks. We're staying pretty busy right now. Yeah.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. We're pretty fortunate. I'll say that.
So, how long have you been building trucks?
We've been building them since '89.
That's a long time.
Yeah, long enough.
So let's just start off with explaining what a glider kit is, because just about every time I talk about them on the radio, if I mention a glider kit, I'll get at least one call or 10 emails, and somebody will say, what's a glider kit? So tell us what a glider kit is.
Well, I kind of know where you're coming from, and it seems like nowadays there's more and more people that are starting to understand the glider kits. I'm kind of like you. You get all kinds of different calls when you start saying glider kits, and some people have even called me thinking that we build airplanes, so I guess it probably will be a good idea to get it cleared up. But what a glider kit is basically a manufactured vehicle, and the glider kits that we use are built by Freightliner, and the only difference in a glider kit and a factory-built truck is that when it goes down the assembly line, all that they do really is just leave out the engine and transmission. So you're buying a brand new truck, all your cab, your suspension, your wheels, your tires, radiator, all your accessories and your piping, everything is brand new. And the only thing that they don't put on that truck when it leaves the assembly line is your engine and transmission. Or at least that's the case on the rolling gliders that we use.
Yeah, rolling gliders, meaning they've got a full suspension and rear end set up in them, where a true glider would just be frame rails, right?
Right, yeah. We used to build a lot of true gliders, but we've switched over to the rolling gliders now just because of the pricing.
Got it. Well, I think a lot of people, after hearing that explanation, would say, why would I buy a truck with no engine and transmission?
Well, I would hope that they would bring it to me when they did. One of the big advantages, Kevin, right now, I guess, of course, everybody's familiar with the EGR problems, and a lot of the newer technology that they are using in the trucks hasn't really been road tested and proven. And what little they have been road tested, that they're finding more and more problems, it seems like, with the EPA regulations and the EPA standards that they have with today. One of the big advantages that we have is we're still using the pre-EGR motors. The biggest one that we use is the 60 series Detroit that most everybody loves, and everybody knows it for the fuel mileage.
Well, I think I'd have to argue with you a little bit. I think EGR engines have been completely proven. They've been proven to be junk.
Well, I'm glad you think so. I kind of do too.
I think they've done a pretty good job of proving that. I'll tell you the most frustrating call I get, and I there are some times where I just feel like telling Lisa, look, if we get one more call about EGR, just hang up on it. I can't. Because, I've been the guy with the answers. That's what I do. That's what I've been doing for years. I help people. If I don't know an answer, and that happens, I go research it, and I figure out, what is the answer to this question. The problem with EGR is there's no answer.
There's no answer. You're right.
Once the problems start, I keep telling people, look, it's when they call me and they tell me these symptoms, what's going wrong. I know it's an EGR problem. It's pretty easy to identify. My answer is you have to find somebody who knows how to troubleshoot the EGR system and fix it without just throwing parts at it. But I don't know who that is because I haven't found anybody yet.
No, it's getting to be more and more common that's their way of fixing things is just try one part, and if that don't work, then try another part. And the sad part is most of the time it's at the customer's expense.
It is. And then at some point they just say, nah, that's all we can do.
Yeah, that's good enough.
That's all we can do. Or I get calls. Yep. I had one last night, 4 turbos in 5 months. Why do you keep placing turbos? Something else is wrong.
Yeah.
The actuator kept failing. Well, I believe that the actuator failed, but why does it keep failing? There's something else going on. Something's causing the problem. So I get so frustrated, and it's after listening to this for several years now, it's just really convinced me that I am going to do everything I possibly can to keep pre-EGR engines in my trucks.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree, and we've got several fleets now that have finally caught on to it. Before the economy and everything, used to, whenever you mentioned a glider kit to some of the larger fleets, they would just kind of turn their head. But now more and more we've had people that have tried our trucks and tested them and come back and made, some pretty large orders. And I think people with the economy, they have to start being a little more open-minded and start adjusting and trying new things, and it's really helped our business because once we do get our product out there and we give them, we get an opportunity to prove ourselves and our trucks, then, we always have repeat customers. And most of the time when people try our trucks and they're used to dealing with the EGR problems on a day-to-day basis, once one of our trucks goes out, we may not hear from them for 4 or 5 months, and then they call back and say, we just don't know what to think about this truck. We've got all these EGR trucks out here, and they're in the shop every single day, and yours ain't been in the shop yet.
They just keep running. You mentioned the Detroit, the DDEC 3, DDEC 4, without a doubt, my favorite engine. I really like the 11-liter just because of my operation, and I run lighter. But that DDEC 3 and DDEC 4 was just a rock-solid engine. They're almost maintenance-free when they're taken care of. The fuel mileage is really good. They're just about bulletproof. I mean, if you don't get 1,000,000 miles out of one, you're doing something wrong. You don't even have to try to get 1,000,000 miles out of them. I typically get about 1.2 or 1.3 out of most of mine.
Right.
So, you know what? When you start to look at this, you start to see the beauty of this and what a great idea it is. We get a new truck, so we have, you know, the aerodynamics and the comfort and the ride, and everything's nice and tight, and the interior's all new. We don't have to deal with the EGR nightmares and yep. all the downsides to them. The fuel mileage is bad. The maintenance costs can be high. The performance isn't as good. Working on them is complicated. They're heavier. And yep. there's just so many downsides to them. And we can get the new truck but avoid all those. So it's really a great idea. And, you know, it's funny because anybody who's been in the industry long enough probably remembers when glider kits were common. You know, when yeah. I first got into the industry, just about any dealer that you pulled into would probably have one or two sitting in the yard somewhere. And they yeah. were used mostly for wrecks and things like that. So, yeah. and the fact that cabs wore out so fast, and so there were a couple reasons why they used them. Wrecks were a lot of them. They kind of had a bad reputation back then because they were thought of as just being thrown together, or the truck was wrecked, or whatever it was. And it was just a way to kind of, I don't know, put another truck back on the road. And they I thought they kind of disappeared. I mean, I hadn't heard of glider kits for years until I was on the radio one day, and I was talking about, you know, all the EGR problems and what we were going to do to keep trucks going. Somebody called me and he said, why don't you build a glider kit? And I said, you're kidding. I said, do they even make glider kits anymore? I haven't heard that in years. And they said, sure they do. That guy Fitzgerald sells them like crazy. I said, who?
Yeah, I guess you've learned a lot about him since then, haven't you?
Boy, oh boy. As soon as he's, you know, when I'm on the air, I can't always, you know, think through ideas because I have to move on to the next call and pay attention and all those
yeah.
things. When I got off the air that day, I thought, wow, glider kits. If I could do that, that would be great. So, you know, you and I got together and then, you know, we got together with Bruce, and then I came up with the signature truck idea, which was taking the glider kit, because it is such a great idea, and then building a glider kit with all of the ideas that I've learned about fuel mileage over the years. And it's been, a little over a year since we built the first one. And I'm getting ready. I want to get together and build another one because
yeah. –
we have new ideas and new technology. We can do it even better than we did the last time. And you've actually, since we built the first one and put it on the road, you've built a lot of gliders that are real similar in specs
yeah.
to that original signature truck.
Yeah, we've built numerous trucks that are real close. I guess everyone's operation is just a little bit different, so we're trying to build the truck to suit each particular customer. So we may not have one that was exactly like that truck, but we've had several trucks that have went out the door that are real close to your specs.
Yeah,
have really good success with it.
yeah, and we're going to go over some numbers on a couple of them. And a lot of times the difference was they didn't want all of the technology we put in, or maybe they didn't go with the lift axle, which was, you know, that idea is kind of still out there a little bit. I like it, but, you
yeah.
know, for some people it's a little extreme.
Well, it's really dependent on your application, I guess.
Right. It seems to me like just about everybody that reports back to me with those specs, or at least real close to the signature truck specs, they're all doing in the 8 mile to the gallon range consistently.
Yeah, and that's unreal.
It is.
I mean, it is to me.
Well, I said when we built the signature truck, I said, look, you know, everybody talks about that time, that one tank where they get 8.2 miles to the gallon. But averages, I just don't know many people in the industry have been able to average 8 miles to the gallon. And I said, if we build that signature truck and we can consistently get 8 as an average, I would be really happy. And
yeah.
the signature truck went to work doing much closer to 9 in a pretty extreme operation, but we've had a lot of trucks go out real close, and they're consistently doing 8 as an average, not just hitting it once in a while.
Right.
Those are
I'm seeing a lot of that. We actually talked to a customer about 2 days ago, Mr. Pat McGuire, one of our good customers. He came back and kind of let us go over the truck. It's got about 75 or 76,000 on it, and it's the first time that I've actually seen the truck since it left there. And like so many other trucks, most of the time we don't get the feedback on, but he did bring the truck back and let us put it up on the jacks and inspect it. And he gave me the fuel reports, and that's the one that I sent you earlier.
Yeah, I'm looking at these, and consistently, going back to looks like October of last year, he pulls the reports monthly, and there isn't a report in here under 8 miles to the gallon.
Yeah, I was very impressed when I seen it.
Yeah, I think there was one, let me find January, which everybody was calling me and complaining in January because their fuel mileage had dropped off so bad. If we look at his January report for complete fuel economy, including idle time, he was 7.9. If we take out the idle time, he was 8.08. That was January. It was cold this year. Everybody was calling and saying, what happened? My fuel mileage dropped. And, you know, it was so drastic this year that every time somebody would call me, I would be trying to figure out what was wrong with their truck. And then at a certain point, I just finally realized, and I went into fuel gauges, and I was checking everybody's trucks, and I just realized it was so cold, there wasn't anything wrong with anybody's trucks. We were just losing fuel mileage because of the weather.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I think whenever that did happen, I remember Pat calling me and telling me that his fuel mileage had dropped, and when he told me what it had dropped to, I got a good laugh. Because when he says it dropped to 7.9, I was... I thought he was joking.
That's 7.9. I know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was looking through here because, you know, with an ECM report, there's a lot of information. And I was looking, and I don't remember which month it was. I'd have to scroll through here again. But there was a considerable amount of time. Where was it? In a 10,000-mile report, there was 9 hours spent between 66 and 71 miles an hour. So he's not babying this thing driving along at 57.
No. No, he says that that's where he normally runs is, you know, anywhere around the 65 to you know, a little bit above that, but... But, yeah, it was doing really good for that.
Yeah. You know, and just if he's running around 65 and he's doing – what was the overall average? I thought I saw the – I thought there was a report on the entire 70-some thousand miles in here somewhere. Do you have it there?
Somewhere in here. I should have organized this, I guess, before we started.
Yeah, I know, me too. Here's one on 52,000 miles, and it was 8.16. And I thought I had one that was on 72,000 miles, though. I thought he ran the report for the whole time. Can't find it right now, though. But if we even take that one at 52,000 miles and 8.16, and he's running most of the time at 65, if he were to drop to 60, that 8.16 would become 8.66.
Yeah. And unique thing about this truck is whenever he came in a couple of days ago, he actually went ahead and added the air tabs and he added the fleet air filter, and we moved the fifth wheel up about 8 inches to close the gap between the truck and the trailer. So we're hoping... You know, within the next 20,000 miles, he'll send us another report. And he says he's really going to shoot for the 9 mile per gallon. So we're going to see what happens.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. You know, if we just take an industry average of 6 miles to the gallon, and we've got a lot of people that call, you know, that wish they could get six. You know, I get the calls where guys are struggling in the fives, and I'm trying to get them to six just, you know, so they'll be safe when fuel prices go up. But if we were to take six and we go to his lifetime average right now on 70-some thousand miles of 8.16, we use 125,000 miles a year. The fuel savings alone is over $17,000 a year.
Yeah, that's unreal. Now imagine if he was running about 100 trucks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's crazy. Or, you know, I had a call yesterday from a fleet that, or a team that was doing 260,000 miles a year, and they had a truck that they've been struggling with. It's getting 5.6 miles to the gallon. So if we were to run their numbers at 5.6 and compare it to what this truck is doing, and the operations were similar, on their mileage, the fuel savings alone is $45,000 a year.
Man, that is unreal.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. It's kind of sad, really, when you think about how much money is lost in the, you know, the fuel.
Yeah. It's amazing. I've been trying for years to get people to realize how much money can be lost, what you just said, how much money can be lost if you don't pay attention to your fuel mileage. And, you know, there was a time where I never talked about getting 8 miles to the gallon. In fact, 2 years ago, when people called my show and claimed they were getting 8 miles to the gallon, I laughed at them and hung up on them and called them liars.
Yeah, I probably would have too.
I knew better. I mean, I've done this long enough to know that there really aren't that many trucks on the road that can accomplish that. But then the more we focused on it, the more we learned about it, the more we worked on it, now we hit that 8. We have to figure out what we're going to do to get to 9 consistently now.
Yep. We're working on it. I hope to get there.
Yeah, and I've got some ideas, and you know, we're going to build some new trucks, and we've got people, you know, Fleet Air Filters. You got to meet those guys at the show, and Jones Performance. David from Fleet Air Filters went up and spent a couple days at Jones Performance. And not only are they working on the high flow air filter elements themselves, the foam elements, they're building all custom housing and custom intakes now. Because,
really?
I think I'm going to put some pictures up on the website. I'll send them to you, though.
Okay.
What we found, you know, the big argument with Bruce and I in the beginning, you know, I would be talking about aerodynamics, and he'd be saying, but those aerodynamic trucks have such horrible airflow to the engine. You know, we need those big Vortox air cleaners out there to get enough air for a good, healthy running engine.
Yeah.
And I said, well, maybe we do, but, you know, they're killing the fuel mileage being out there. Where's the happy medium? How can we design? So that's really what David is working on. And what they found was those big Vortox cleaners might bring in a lot of air, but by the time it got through the entire intake system and then through the filter and the filter housing, there was a lot of restriction in there. There was a big volume of air, but then there was, you know, there were choke points where it really wasn't doing any good. So they're building complete intake systems now. So we're really looking forward to they've got some made. In fact, they put a whole new system on Slick, and we should be getting some numbers back on that. But I'll get some pictures up from their trip up there. They made some pretty custom-looking stuff. So I'm interested in that. There's some wheel bearing technology we're looking at. We just put Evans coolant in two of our trucks. And because the coolant's so much better, we were able to bump the thermostats up and turn the fan on temperature up higher so the fan isn't running as much. So we're looking to see what that's going to do. Once we get all these kind of road tested and proven, then we'll go back and we'll build another signature truck with all the new technology in it.
Yeah. Keep me posted on the intake systems. That sounds like something I'd probably be interested in on my trucks.
Yeah, definitely. Well, as soon as they're working hard. David's so excited. he's, you know, every time he calls me now, that's all he talks about is, you know, the new intake system, and he's got new ideas, and
yeah.
It's pretty cool because he's excited about it. We're getting stuff done on that. And then, you know, I've been researching trailer technology, so what we'd really love to do is build a signature truck and a signature trailer combination and see what
we
can do.
Yeah, that's something that we've talked about doing a lot, too. We've actually got the facility to build trailers, and we've talked about that numerous times, just getting involved in putting together a really aerodynamic trailer, because that's something that nobody's really targeted. So
Now, if we were to build a really aerodynamic trailer and then use the low rolling resistance concepts with the wide singles and the very best tires and good aerodynamics and all the other things we could do, then I think that 9 number starts to become really possible.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't see that being unrealistic.
Now, we might even have to start talking about the T word then.
Yeah. Yeah, it never ends, does it?
I know. That's right. It's fun, though. All right, let's see.
Yeah.
If you've got a question, a comment, whatever it might be on glider kits, on the signature truck, on your truck, whatever it might be, open phone lines. We're going to start getting to some calls. Press 1 on your phone right now, and Lisa will screen your call, and then we'll get to you. We've got plenty of lines open, so jump in and join us. Let's go to where are we going to go? We're going to go to Pennsylvania. Tom, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How's it going?
Going great. What's on your mind tonight?
One quick question. That guy that you're talking about, the 75,000 miles that you guys were just discussing.
Yes.
In his operation, what kind of weight does he haul? I never hear you talk about how much weight they're hauling, so I'm just curious on that. But
isn't he pulling for ONS?
Yes.
So it's
as far as the weight goes, I didn't get a chance really to talk to him about his average weights. He says that they're not a real light load. I can't really answer that question, to be honest with you, to tell you exactly what he is pulling. It's just general freight, and he said that, you know, he does have the 80,000-pound loads, you know, from time to time, so it's not all empty freight or really light freight, if that's what you're thinking.
Well, that was one of my questions. But for you, Mr. Kevin, what I wanted to know is I understand only certain makes will allow you to buy a glider kit. My question is, what's the feasibility money-wise to maybe go get an 05, 06 Volvo, because I like to drive a Volvo, and make it into a glider kit by taking out the engine and the rear ends and changing all that out and then selling those as used parts to kind of cut the cost a little bit? Do you think that would be cost-worthy, or is that kind of just you're spending way too much money compared to just going down and getting the Kenworth where you can get a glider kit or a Peterbilt and just go straight to the glider kit?
You know, there's we're looking at a couple different ideas. The glider kit, you know, that is pretty much rock solid. You know, Robert's built so many glider kits, they do it in their sleep. We've also looked at the idea of taking an older pre-EGR truck and completely reconditioning it and making it like new again. Then the idea of, well, what if we took an EGR truck, so it's a little newer, but we pull the drivetrain out, put another drivetrain in, it can be done. The one thing we have to be a little careful of, I think, on that is we are breaking EPA regulations then. Now, nobody's really enforcing it anywhere. In fact, it's hard to find the regulations, but the year of the truck, you have to maintain the emission standards for that year of that vehicle.
Okay.
Whereas a glider kit, the way the rules are written, is you only have to meet the emission standards of the engine that you put into the glider kit. And if we take a pre-EGR truck, then all we have to do is make sure we maintain the same emission standards as it had originally. So if we start to do that on 04 and newer, we may find that we're going to run into some problems there.
Are you talking about because of the the EPA side?
Yeah. Now, it's not to say that I wouldn't do it. Like, on my own truck, I very well may do that with my 05. I may yank the EGR engine out of it and put a pre-EGR engine in and then recondition it. So I would do it myself, and I'd take the chance on it myself. I'm not sure that I would, you know, make a big deal out of it that we're building them for everybody.
Okay, another quick thing is, do you have, I know you have it somewhere on one of your websites, and I never catch it, where you're kind of tracking the signature trucks and kind of explaining through it, because I've seen the signature truck 2 years ago, and I actually got to meet you down at Louisville, but I haven't really been able to kind of keep track of what you've done to it, how it kind of works, and all this kind of stuff, because I'm looking about maybe getting back in as an owner-operator, but I'm thinking if I did it, I would want to go the glider kit route, which would save you a lot of money in buying a truck. And then the thing you were just saying, I mean, I got a Volvo right now. It's a company truck, got 405,000 miles on it, and with it set up, I'm constantly running 7, and I came out of Lake Station, Indiana, and we can run 68, and I'm a company driver. I'm getting down the road pretty good and coming through Pennsylvania and the Flatlands, Ohio, and everything. I was running 7.5.
Those are
and
good
I'm
numbers.
I'm bumping that governor. I tell you that right now because, you know, I'm pushing everything I can to get my day done and to get my miles in, and I'm thinking, man, if I'm pushing 7.5 with that setup, without all the stuff you're talking about, I could clearly see with, like, air tabs and some, you know, getting rid of this float, this muffler, getting a different muffler, just, you know, nothing really crazy, but you could change that. I could see where you're saying that 9, and we could possibly start seeing 10, which the amount of money you're saving, you said in that one scenario, you're talking $45,000, and that's incredible to think about.
Yeah, let me just be clear on the 10 number. I don't think 10 is feasible unless we build the truck and the trailer. And I think in order to do it, and sometimes some of the technologies that we're proving and testing, they may work. They may not always be cost effective. So sometimes we might prove a technology and say, hey, you know, this does work. We'll improve fuel mileage. But it's not going to be cost effective in everybody's operation. And the one thing we have to remember is that once we get a truck to, say, 8.5,
yes,
then the next half mile per gallon doesn't really save you nearly as much money as when you go from 6 to 6.5. When you go from 8.5 to 9, the savings aren't really that big. So
yes,
10... if we ever shot for it, it would take every bit of technology that I'm aware of, and it would have to be truck and trailer, and it may not be completely cost effective. We may be doing it just to prove that it could be done, but it's sure. Certainly, you know, when you're in the 5 or the 6 range, it is huge when you can get that up into the 7.5. If we start talking about 8, which most of the signature trucks are doing, there's some huge potential for savings. Let's go to, let's see, hold on. I thought I saw another call here. Well, maybe not. Lisa, do I have another call somewhere?
You do. Did you talk to Bob Rutherford?
Woo-hoo. I didn't. There it is.
Does that name sound familiar, Bob Rutherford?
Yes, it does, in Tennessee. Bob, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin and Robert. I think Robert might remember me also.
Oh, yeah, I know you, Bob.
Robert and Tommy put one of the companies I'm involved with, National Seating, they put our top-of-the-line seats in their top-of-the-line glider conversions they do there. So,
right.
But the thing I wanted to call in about is part of my background has been with the fan clutch business, Horton and Evans I've worked for in the past, and not Evans, but Kaiser. But the thing about this Evans coolant, I think that can change everything. When you change the thermostat setting, you can also change your fan clutch to where there's these new electromechanical fan clutches that are multi-speed. They can be two or three speed. And that can change the whole setup as far as when the fan comes on. And with a multi-speed fan clutch, you can actually have a low speed that will keep the high speed from kicking on and wasting horsepower. So I'm right now working on some projects, and it's great that Robert's you guys are having the show tonight, because one of the things that I want to do is have a glider that has a multi-speed fan clutch, either two or three speed depending on the application, the Evans coolant on it, and a fan with the Evans coolant and a multi-speed fan clutch. You can reduce the size of the fan and reduce the horsepower draw on the top end. And I'm pretty well convinced, and I've talked to several fleets here in Tennessee, of looking at least another half mile per gallon increase in fuel economy by taking those the three concepts of the Evans coolant, a multi-speed fan clutch, and changing the temperature setup to where you can actually knock off at least half a gallon of mile per gallon increase in fuel economy.
That sounds really interesting. We need to get together on that because, like I said, I started researching the Evans coolant about a year ago, and it was one of those things, the more I read about it, the more I thought, why didn't I know about this before? It makes so much sense. And then we got busy with a lot of projects, and finally this year at Louisville, I got to spend enough time with those guys from Evans that I said, look, let's just put this stuff in my truck. I want to try this. So we just got it in Monday. We converted two trucks over, and we'll start seeing some fuel mileage numbers. And we did when we converted to the Evans. We bumped up the thermostats, and we have the fan on temperature set higher. So the great thing about my operation, completely dedicated run, same truck, same driver, same freight. I've been tracking the fuel mileage forever, and we're so consistent on fuel mileage that it's easy to tell when something works and when it doesn't. So we're pretty excited. I don't like to do any numbers till I have almost 30 days as far as running averages, but we should have numbers coming out within the month.
Yeah, and what we need to do is on those same trucks that have the Evans in them is do a multi-speed fan clutch on them.
That would be really interesting. We need to get together. I'd love to talk to you about that.
And Robert, there's a major fleet, I'm not going to name their name, but they're based in Cookeville, Tennessee, that I was discussing thermal cycling problems that they have with the charge air coolers, radiators, anything that's in front of the fan going from zero fan speed to maximum fan speed, which also at the same time is causing thermal cycling where you're going from maximum cooling to maximum heat. And the idea of a multi-speed fan clutch is you will actually eliminate the going from the maximum cooling to no cooling to where you go from maximum to a very low cooling, which should stabilize the heat exchangers. And that fleet got very excited, and I suggested they use a Fitzgerald's glider as an experimental vehicle to be able to prove that they can not only get the better fuel economy, but reduce charge air cooler failures, which appears to be a problem for them.
Yeah. Okay, well, I appreciate that, Bob.
Always remember me in your will.
That's right.
hey, one thing maybe you two guys can clear me up on, because I the one thing that I just realized the other day that I don't quite understand, how does the air conditioning affect the fan on time? If we turn the temperature up so the fan doesn't come on as often, is it still going to be coming on because of the AC?
Well, not only the AC.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Robert.
Go ahead, Bob.
Okay. Not only the AC turns the fan on, but also the charge air coolers often have sensors in them that will activate the fan. And also transmission coolers, any type of auxiliary cooler, there's a lot of sensors in there. And in fact, one of the biggest headaches I ever had when I was doing sales and service on fan clutches was they would actually put systems in place that if a driver turned the air conditioner on, but there wasn't 90 pounds air pressure to engage an air-operated clutch because it would sit there, slip and burn, they would actually have mechanics troubleshooting problems that were not really a problem. The fan would not activate when the air conditioner wanted to come on because there wasn't 90 pounds air pressure to turn the fan on, so it would just slip and burn, which is one of the great advantages of a straight electromechanical clutch, is that you don't depend on the air system and you don't have to do that. But I've troubleshot systems that had six different sensors that were activating or deactivating the fan clutch, and you get some of those that are just working even low voltage going to a solenoid. You get 10 volts going to a solenoid, which could be pretty common. You end up with a solenoid that's fluttering, that's putting air in and out of an air-operated clutch, which is a major pain to figure out what's going on. So, but yeah, the air conditioner, charge air cooler, any other thing that needs to be cooled, the vocational trucks especially will have extra coolers on them, and they all have sensors. You get up to a certain temperature, turn the fan on. So fan run times have actually gone from 5% of the time to I've seen up to 65-70% of the time. So wow. Something always wants cooling.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. As soon as we get some numbers on the conversions that we've done so far, which I like to get about 30 days, I definitely want to get together and talk about trying some of that stuff out on these.
Sounds good. Yeah.
All right. I appreciate it. Let's see. I need to get to another phone call here. Let's go to Ronald. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How you doing?
Doing good. What's on your mind tonight?
I was going to say one thing real quick. I was going to say last time I heard you talk about the signature truck, I thought you said he was pulling a reefer and was heavy most of the time.
The original signature truck was. The truck that we built for Louisville, not this last year but the year before, he runs out of Salt Lake City. He's got his own authority, so he's got, I think, three other trucks that run. And they pull heavy reefer freight up into the Northwest. And his fleet average with his other trucks was about 5.7. And with the full-blown signature truck, we had everything on it. He was doing in the nines. Then we started playing around. He dropped down to 8. We had some problems with it. We started tweaking some things. So he's been consistently above 8. On that truck, pulling heavy.
Okay. My question is, I have two of them for you. Number one is, do you have pictures of the signature truck and also the concept trucks that you have built for the show? Because I haven't seen those anywhere, but they could be.
Yeah, I'm trying to think where the signature. You know what happens is we put them up in forums on the website, and then we get so many forums, they get lost and buried, and one of the things that we're probably going to do here soon is build a section on the website just for the trucks that we're tracking like this, because we tend to put them up in forums, and then the forums just get lost because we have so many new forums. But it's one of those projects that we just need to get done because we're testing so many things now, and we do have pictures and we do have results. We just don't have them in one place that's easy to find. So I'm going to move that project up to the front of the list.
Okay, I'd appreciate that. My last question is for the – you talk a lot about the fuel mileage and getting, 8 miles per gallon versus 6 miles per gallon and how much that saves you. But the question I would really like to know, and wondering if there's any studies out there, is what's the difference between a non-EGR motor get 7.5 or 8 miles per gallon versus an EGR motor getting 5.5 to 6 miles to the gallon, as far as California emissions? And are they putting all of these things and making us go to these engines that are supposed to be cleaner burning? But I want to know if we've got an older truck that may not be as clean burning, but we're getting, outrageous miles to the gallon compared to those other ones, which one actually is doing the more damage to the environment, so to speak?
Well, there's actually two issues here, and I have done a lot of research on this. You know, you have one group that says it's we need to burn less fossil fuel so that we're not so dependent on oil and those kind of things. Well, clearly then, something like the Signature truck is much better than an EGR because we burn a lot less fuel. But if we're talking about pure emissions and emissions the way that they measure them in California and the way that we're going to end up measuring them everywhere eventually, in some cases, it depends on what we're talking about. If we're talking about particulates, the EGR engines are very, very clean. They don't put out a lot of particulate. When we talk about NOx, which is the newest standard that we have to meet, low NOx, the more efficient you make an engine, the better it performs, the more NOx it puts out. Now, when you make an engine really efficient and very fuel efficient, you do reduce the particulates, but you actually increase the NOx. The only way to get rid of NOx is either with low NOx settings, which hurts the efficiency of the engine, or
right.
with an after treatment device like SCR or enhanced EGR. And it really is, as much as I don't like those, they are very, very clean burning. The NOx in an SCR engine is almost non-existent, and one of our Signature trucks actually puts out a lot of NOx because it's so efficient. So it does depend. If they're trying to reduce NOx, then we can't do it just by getting better fuel mileage. It has to be some sort of an after treatment.
Okay. I was going to say, it almost seems like a catch-22, you know, you get better fuel mileage, but, you know, or
right.
you can have that better and worse fuel mileage.
Yeah, and exactly, and I've said that for years, that it's the way they went about this was there was a lot of other things that could have been done better. Let's go to Hugh this time. Hugh, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. Hello, Robert. Good to talk to you guys again.
You too.
Glider kits. On the Signature truck, the full-blown Signature truck has around a 264 to 1 gear ratio, a single drive axle with a liftable pusher type configuration. When you get the glider, the rolling glider from the manufacturer, is that already on it, or is that something that you have to do a conversion once you get it?
That's a conversion that we actually do at our factory.
Oh. It wouldn't
yeah.
be cheaper just to get the truck with a single drive axle and just to add the tag axle to it?
Well, you know, you would think that, and whenever me and Kevin had first come up with this idea, we probably spent 3 or 4 months dealing with different dealerships and trying to get the factory to set this truck up the way that we had in our head, and we finally just got to the point that we gave up.
Huh. Okay, well, along that same line, the exhaust system on the Signature Coronado, you actually move the exhaust from the side to I guess, is it a single exhaust in the back?
Yes.
Do you have to do that conversion too every time, or can you get it from the factory that way?
I think you can actually get that option from the factory. I tell you what we run into is normally when we buy trucks, we buy about 100 trucks at a time. And when we do buy in large volume, our pricing, we get a really good price if we buy the exact same truck, you know, in a large quantity. So what happens is if we order
get them all, with it. Go ahead.
Yeah, well,
if
I go back and I say I want one truck that's got rear exhaust, or I want 3 of these trucks that's got rear exhaust, then I automatically, right off the bat, I lose the discount unless I buy 100 of those trucks. So what we found is it's easier for us just to get, you know, to have a standard base truck and then for us to do the conversion afterwards.
Right. Kevin, I know you haven't had the ovens in your truck long enough to give us any numbers, but what about the actual installation? Did it go the way you thought it would? Things like an operation like that, you're going to run into some surprises. How did that go?
One good, one not so good. And like you said, it's mechanical. We expected it. We took both trucks in. They sent their engineer down. While we were doing my two trucks, we were training the shop on the procedure. And basically what you have to do is you have to get all of the old coolant out, and then you have to dry the system as much as possible. We want the water content to be down under 5%. And, you know, there's a lot of nooks and crannies inside of an
right.
engine, a heater core. So the procedure is to take off, you know, connections everywhere. And, you know, we use dryers and vacuums and compressed air. What is going on here?
I'm probably going into a bad area here.
Now, I've got some sort of a baseball game playing in the background. I don't know what's going on.
Who's winning?
No, it's a race. I don't know what's going on.
But you basically had, what, a one shift, 8 hours, 8 or 10 hours, and it was done?
We actually got two trucks done. We started at about 10 in the morning, and we had it done by 4 in the afternoon, 3:30 or 4. We had two trucks done. That was one engineer and one of our mechanics. It went really well. I learned a lot. I was there when they were doing it. One truck was perfect. The other truck, the next day, we had a leak. We actually tore one of the braided lines, putting it back together somewhere, so we had to go back in and fix that line. But other than that, everything went well, and we should have some numbers here pretty soon.
Now, I have a TriPack APU on my truck, and the coolant system is tied together, which is how the APU keeps the engine warm during wintertime. APU usage, it circulates the water. So basically, when you drain that system on my truck, you're going to have to drain the lines all the way through the APU. I guess you just disconnect everything like you're talking about, and then apply your vacuums and dehumidify and everything.
Yeah, and then once you blow out and vacuum out and pull off lines and drain and get as much out as you can, then they actually have a liquid that you run through the system that absorbs water and dries it out as well. So that's like the second step. Then you put everything back together, you fill it up with the coolant, and they have a Brix meter, that Brix meter, I'm not sure how you say the word, that will check for the water percentage. And they're really shooting for under 5%.
Gotcha. Well, I believe that's... I better hang up. I'm probably doing that.
Yeah, I think that's you this time. I got the thing figured out on my end. I know what it is now, so... I don't have a race in my ear anymore. That helps.
Okay, well,
hey, I'll let you go. I need to get to one more call, and then we're going to – boy, the time just flew by tonight. We'll give out some phone numbers for Fitzgerald in case we didn't get to your questions and you want to talk to him about pricing, warranty, options, a whole bunch of things that I thought we'd get to, and now we're out of time. Let's go to Minnesota. Matt, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Kevin. And
hey there.
Robert, this is Matt Youngliffe. I got the white Peterbilt we did up at Michael's shop.
Oh, hey, Matt.
Fall. How are
you? Good.
Yeah,
how
I'm,
are you?
Sitting out in the backyard right now by a fire and having s'mores. And, you know, you all got to come up here in about 2 months or so on the 17th of July.
That's right.
Yep.
Looking forward to it.
That's the big pig roast I told you about at the truck show there.
Yep.
But,
excellent.
Said somebody started to ask a question that they didn't quite ask what I wanted to hear. Have you been hearing anything about more models of trucks going to be coming available for gliders? Or
As of right now, we're the only ones we're doing are the Freightliners. You know, we have a lot of people asking about the Kenworth, and we're just not seeing it available right now, and they're not giving us any idea in the near future that they're going to do the gliders anymore.
Okay, yeah, I heard a rumor they were going to, but I haven't heard that officially from anybody that would know, so... Because I like that T660 is my favorite truck on the road right now, if I could get one.
That is a nice truck.
Yeah.
You know, as of right now, it's just a rumor.
Yeah.
Every now and then, somebody calls me on the air, and they say, oh, I talked to Peterbilt the other day, and they're going to send me a 387 glider kit. Or I talked to Kenworth, and I'm getting a T660 glider kit. And, you know, people can say whatever they want on the radio, but every time I go to follow up on it, it's just not true. We just can't get them.
Yeah, well, you even had that one call that said he got a Cascadia and built
it
from scratch.
I know.
Well, my mind just went blank. I had another question. For Hugh there with the TriPak and the Evans coolant.
Yeah.
That is something I would talk to TriPak about, or Thermo King about, before I did it, because they have much lower temperature settings on them heads for them small engines. They got a pre-cooler on it that when you shut your truck off, that the fans will kick in and all that and cool the water down before the TriPak will start. It's got to be like 140 or less.
Wow. Yeah,
that could be an issue with Evans coolant with APUs.
Yeah, the Evans coolant would be okay. We would have to be careful about trying to raise the temperatures.
Yeah, because I've thought about that for mine. That's something I'll look into probably this summer, but it's an option.
Hadn't thought about that. We'll have to figure that out. I'll talk to the people at Evans to see if they've got any data or experience with that yet.
Yeah. Alrighty.
All right.
Well, that was all I had, so have yourself a good night.
All right. Good talking to you. We'll talk to you again soon. Robert, we're just about out of time, and I know we had questions that we didn't get to, and there were things that I wanted to talk about, warranties and options and pricing and all kinds of things. Why don't you give out a phone number in case somebody has questions?
Okay. The phone number is 931-277-3836.
All right, say that one more time.
Okay, 931-277-3836. And ask for my younger brother, Tommy Jr. A lot of times I'll be in the factory and I can't really get to the phone because of the air wrenches and the stuff I've got going on in there. So right now Tommy's taking care of the sales and he's really good at answering the questions. So if you have any questions, you can just ask for Tommy Jr. and he'll take real good care of you.
Yeah, what you really mean is you're usually laying under a truck taking a nap.
Yeah, there you go. It's all the same.
You stick your feet out, put an air wrench in your hand, and catch 20 minutes of sleep, right?
Yeah, I got to make it sound like I'm doing something, though.
That's right. All right, well, we will talk to you again soon. I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing all that with us. And when both of us get some time here, we'll get to work on Signature Truck. Gary.
Oh, he's still there?
Yep. Yeah, I said as soon as we both get some time, we'll get together and we'll start working on Signature Truck Series 2.
Okay, that sounds good to me, Kevin. I was glad to be on here.
We got to get together on some ideas with the trailers, too.
Yeah, we definitely need to get started on that one. I'd say that will be a pretty good-sized project.
All right, outstanding. All right, we will talk to you again soon.
All right, thanks, Kevin.
You're welcome. Take care. All right. That's going to wrap up the program for tonight. Stick around in 30 minutes. The live show's coming up on Sirius XM. Join us for that. Thanks for joining us here. If you know somebody who was interested in the glider kit signature truck concept and they didn't get a chance to make it on the call tonight, the podcasts are always available on the website. That's letstruck.com. Go to the Audio Road tab. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.